Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For years now, the tide has been running for more and more gun rights, to carry, to arm up, to own more or less anything, and less gun control. The big, aggressive enforcer has been the NRA, the National Rifle Association. Cross the NRA, resist it and its agenda, and you're in trouble if you're a politician, or at least you have been. Could that change in the wake of the assault rifle slaughter of women and children, many children, in Connecticut? This hour on Point, we're looking at the political power of the NRA after Newtown. You can join the conversation. Do we have a sea change here? Strong enough to break the grip of the NRA? Will the NRA change? Should it? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. There's been lots of talk about guns, gun control, and the NRA. Skeptical talk from people who have been big NRA supporters. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, one of the party's strongest backers of the NRA. But in the aftermath of the Newtown massacre, he's called for serious conversation on gun control and possible policy reform. Here he is on yesterday's NPR's All Things Considered.
I am a proud member of the NRA and have been, and I'm a lifetime member and will always be. I'm a defender of the Second Amendment to the Constitution. But with that being said, you know, we need to take a look now at who we are as a society, as a country, and how we protect those that need protected the most, which is our babies and our children.
Senator Joe Manchin, big NRA supporter, now saying, wait a minute here. We'll see. Virginia Democratic Senator Mark Warner, A rating from the NRA, but after Friday's mass shooting, he's made calls for consideration of stricter gun laws. Here he is Monday talking with Virginia's local CBS station, WTVR.
I believe every American has Second Amendment rights, and that the ability to hunt and is part of our culture. I've had an NRA rating of an A, but, you know, enough is enough. The idea that we can just kind of ignore this issue, I join with the president, and I think reasonable folks in both parties, and I think the overwhelming majority of Americans who are gun owners, who believe that we've got to put stricter rules on the books.
Two big politicians who have been big NRA members and supporters. Here's one who hasn't been. On NBC's Meet the Press Sunday, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg said the power of the NRA is overrated.
Today, the NRA's power is so vastly overrated. The public, when you do the polls, they want to stop this carnage. And if 20 kids isn't enough to convince them, I don't know what would.
We're looking at the political power today of the NRA after the Newtown massacre. I want to say right off the bat, we invited the NRA to join us today. They did not step up to that invitation. I wish they had. They do have a press conference scheduled for Friday. The whole country will be listening there. With us right now from Muncie, Indiana, is Bob Spitzer, a leading expert on gun control law, the Second Amendment, and the history, the politics of the NRA. He's professor of political science at the State University of New York College at Cortland, author of The Politics of Gun Control. Bob Spitzer, welcome to On Point. Thanks for joining us today.
Tom, it's good to be with you today.
And with us from Washington is Josh Horwitz, executive director of the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. He's co-author of Guns, Democracy, and the Insurrectionist Idea. We'll ask about that. Josh Horwitz, it's a pleasure to have you as well. Thanks for joining us.
Tom, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm going to come first to you, Josh. You're in Washington, maybe feeling the vibe there. Is something changed? We've seen this again and again in the past. Big killings, big shootings, lots of talk about change. But the overall trend has gone the other way. The NRA has stayed very large and in charge in many ways when it comes to gun policy in this country. Is this time different, Josh?
Well, I can tell you that I was on the Hill yesterday afternoon talking to a number of members who have not necessarily been our supporters in the past. And there's absolutely a sea change going on. There is a real search for solutions. I think there will be there's going to be obviously a task force. Leader Pelosi has put together a task force. And I think that it's very clear that there's going to be a real search for meaningful solutions here. And the interesting part is that those solutions will include all parts, hopefully, bipartisan effort. They'll be looking, they'll include sportsmen in that discussion. And I think they'll be going out to all sorts of different people. But the point is absolutely to move forward. It's not for obstruction. I'm sure that there will be obstructionists, especially in the House of Representatives. But you feel an unbelievable, palpable change. And I think that change has developed over the last year. And I think this latest incident just got people who are ready to act, moving forward. So, yeah, the feeling is completely different.
A different feeling. Bob Spitzer, a sea change here that's big enough, tough enough to really crack the power, the stance of the NRA?
It could be the case. I would frame it slightly differently. I think the prospect of major significant change is not likely, but I think it's possible in this environment, and for two reasons, which you've sort of alluded to. Mm-hmm. The first is the entirely horrific nature of this shooting last Friday. It has rocked people, I think, in a way that other past shootings have not, and I don't mean to minimize those past terrible incidents by any means, but this shooting, I think, has been uniquely horrifying to people. It's galvanized public attention in a way we haven't seen in many years, I would say, going back to the Columbine shooting from 1999. Mm. And the second political factor is the fact that President Obama has just come off of a solid re-election victory. His political party picked up some seats in both houses of Congress. The new Congress convenes in just a couple of weeks. And it is a moment in time when, politically speaking, the country turns a page, when the president has a mandate, has an opportunity, a window to advance important policy objectives. Any president in this position would have that opportunity. And should he choose to use it, I think there is a real possibility for some real change. But I'm not sure I would not put it in the category of likely, but I do think it's certainly possible.
The NRA and the president announcing a task force today on guns. Vice President Joe Biden slated to lead that. The NRA announcing it will have its own press conference, big major event, it says, on Friday after a week's silence on the killings in Newtown. They've said they're prepared to make major contributions to make sure this never happens again. You followed the NRA for a long time, Bob. What do you expect that might mean?
It's hard for me to believe that it will have anything included within it, specific policy changes of the sort that are being discussed now. The NRA has long held a position of essentially opposition to pretty much any kind of gun control measure. Its official line has been that we have enough gun laws on the books and that what we need to do is enforce those laws more fully. Now, by the same token, the NRA has expended great effort to undermine the effectiveness of existing laws by, for example, minimizing the influence of the federal agency that carries out gun laws, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. And it's an agency that is underfunded, that has had its hands tied in a lot of different ways that no other federal law enforcement agency has. And I would be frankly astonished if they backed off on their basic positions. I think what they'll be doing on Friday is framing the issue in a way that talks more vaguely and generally about a culture of violence. Maybe they'll talk about, violent movies, video games, other things. But I would be astonished if they actually talked openly and specifically about the kinds of changes that are being discussed right now.
Josh, there's a lot being discussed right now. I mean, President Obama talking about this, the White House signaling there may be something to an effort to bring the assault weapons ban back. Dianne Feinstein of California talking about that, of course, on Capitol Hill. California, legislation introduced mandating background checks, one-year permits for people who want to buy ammunition there. Michigan, Republican governor there vetoed the legislation being pushed just last week that would have permitted concealed weapons in schools. Everybody's heard about the big private equity company, Cerberus, that's selling off its stake in the company that made the rifle that was used in Newtown last week. I mean, even down to Dick's Sporting Goods announcing they got 500 stores selling rifles and handguns, announcing that they're going to change their policy there. They're going to scale back weapon sales because of the shooting. We don't know for how long. They've suspended the sale of modern sporting rifles, as they call them, in all our stores chain. That would be, I suppose, would include the kind of assault rifle that we saw there last week. And there's more that's up on the rails. Where does all this effort run into the NRA? If they're going to oppose, where will that start to show up, Josh?
Well, I think the term modern sporting rifle is just a euphemism to make assault weapons sound better. And I think when we talk about what's going on and what's on the agenda, everybody is talking about the assault weapon, you know, reinstating and strengthening the expired assault weapons ban, and especially going towards also trying to getting rid of high-capacity magazines. These magazines, the shooter had 30-round magazines, multiple 30-round magazines, and of course the shooter at Aurora had 100-round magazines, similar weapon, AR-15 style weapon. In Aurora, that was the weapon that was the weapon that jammed was in the Portland Mall.
Oh, okay.
Just 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's hard to keep these all in track. So there's definitely people are really focusing on the assault weapons because they're clearly the weapons of choice in these, and they should be. They're designed for the battlefield, and their one purpose is anti-personnel. They're there to kill people. The other things people are talking about is making sure that our background check is effective and that it reaches 100% of all gun sales. Right now, in many states, I come from Virginia, you can go and buy easily these types of weapons at any gun show without a background check. Mm-hmm. You can go, you know, buy them in the classified ads. And so the idea that if we're going to do any type of meaningful screening, it's got to apply to all gun sales. It wouldn't make sense when you're going through the airport security to have one line with a scanner and one line for not. Where would terrorists go, right?
Is there anything on that list that you've just laid out that the NRA, you think, might now be open to, or do you expect blanket opposition?
Well, I think it's very interesting that the background check has huge support among NRA supporters and gun owners. So I think that's something that they may be pushed into.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the political power of the NRA, the National Rifle Association, after the Newtown massacre of so many children and the women who taught and tried to protect them. The NRA has been feeling the heat after many years of great power in our political system. On Monday, hundreds of protesters gathered in front of Capitol Hill offices of the NRA to push for new gun controls in response to the school shooting in Newtown. Shame on the NRA, came the cry there. But we'll see how this plays out across the country. Bob Spitzer is with us. He's a leading expert on the NRA and the politics around the NRA, the politics of gun control, his book, and The Right to Bear Arms, member of both the NRA and the Brady Center, a professor at State University of New York College at Cortland, SUNY Cortland. Josh Horowitz is with us from the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence, joins us from Washington. All kinds of talk about guns and gun control and the NRA in these recent days. Here was Joe Scarborough, Morning Joe, Monday, urging lawmakers to go for stricter measures on gun control.
I've spent the past few days grasping for solutions and struggling for answers, while daring to question my own long-held belief on these subjects. I've always taken a libertarian's approach to Hollywood's First Amendment rights and gun collectors' Second Amendment rights. And I stood by those libertarian beliefs after Columbine, after Aurora, and after Arizona. Friday changed everything. It must change everything. We all must begin anew and demand that Washington's old way of doing business is no longer acceptable.
Former Republican congressman and A-rated NRA guy, Joe Scarborough there, no longer acceptable. But on the other hand, you don't know where this is going to go. There's pushes in many directions here. Here was Virginia's Republican Governor Bob McDonnell telling WTOP Radio Tuesday, now is the time to seriously discuss arming teachers, going the other way.
If people were armed, not just a police officer, but other school officials that were trained and chose to have a weapon, certainly there had been an opportunity to stop aggressors coming into the school. So I think that's a reasonable discussion that ought to be had.
Reasonable discussion. Arm up the teachers. Texas Republican Congressman Louis Gohmert told Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday he wished Sandy Hook principal Don Hochsprung had been armed as the massacre unfolded at her school.
Chris, I wish to God she had had an M4 in her office locked up, so when she heard gunfire, she pulls it out, and she didn't have to lunge heroically with nothing in her hands, but she takes him out, takes his head off before he can kill those precious kids.
Put an M4 in the principal's office, and we may be on our way. We don't know what the NRA yet means by saying it wants to make a meaningful contribution here. We just don't know. Bob Spitzer, you've looked at the NRA for a long time. Describe how it's built its political power. How has it become so great? Obviously, part of it comes from just the fact that lots of Americans own guns and support gun ownership rights. How has that been translated into such what's looked like ironclad power on Capitol Hill and beyond, Bob?
Well, the NRA has become a more political and politicized organization in about the last 35 years or so. And it certainly is very influential. It's been in the lobbying game, the political game, for a long time. The NRA was formed way back in 1871 as an organization to improve shooting and marksmanship skills. It really only became a very political organization in recent times. And the NRA, aside from being experienced and influential in lobbying activities inside the Beltway of Washington, D.C., it also has a base of support around the country of about 4 million members, or perhaps a little less, people who feel very, very strongly about the gun issue. And when you've got a base of support in localities all around the country, grassroots support, people who are willing to get up off their sofas, to make a phone call, to vote, to contribute money, to attend a meeting based solely on this issue, they can exercise a great deal of influence. There's an old rule of politics that a small but strongly motivated minority can win the day over a large but relatively apathetic majority. There is no sort of equivalent counterbalance to the NRA on the other side of the equation. There are pro-gun control groups, but they don't have the same kind of large mobilized base that is one key factor to explain the NRA's influence. And the NRA has done pretty well in about the last 10 years because they had a very friendly president in the White House. George W. Bush and the Bush administration was the most gun-friendly president in American history, and I mean that in policy terms. The NRA pretty much ran the table, and when the government itself is leaning in a certain policy direction, that has a similar effect on public opinion. And conversely, the Democratic Party felt that the gun issue hurt them most recently in
hurt
the 2000
them because they were frightened of votes going against them, frightened of the NRA going against them.
Well, they believed that Al Gore's strong support for stronger gun laws hurt him in the 2000 election and perhaps cost him the election. Now, there's been an empirical analysis of that race and other races, which demonstrates that, in fact, that's really not the case. But, of course, in any close election, anything can tip the balance, right? But nevertheless, Democrats come out of 2000 saying, this issue hurt us, we want to rebuild our coalition. So they decide to backbench the gun issue, by and large, and to expand the umbrella of their party to include some gun rights people, some more conservative Democrats. So the sort of other side of the issue has not gotten much airing in recent years, and those calculations have helped tip the balance in favor of the gun rights side.
Josh Horowitz, what about my impression is that there's been an ideological shift or drift over time with the NRA. I mean, I think back years ago of it as kind of defending, you know, hunters' rights to have their guns and so on. Now it's so forthrightly out there. It's been defending, you know, assault rifles and high-capacity magazines and a kind of exotic weaponry. Is my impression correct that is there an ideological shift here? And what has driven that? What's the motivation?
Well, you're absolutely correct, and they've actually created a philosophy or embraced a philosophy to justify these types of weapons, and that's what I call the insurrectionist idea, and that is the idea that somehow the Second Amendment has morphed into this militia clause, morphed into an individual right to fight government tyranny, and so the idea is we should be able to have weapon implements of modern warfare unknown to the government, so that when the government becomes tyrannical, we should be able to, you know, become the gun owners should become the fourth branch of government.
Are you just riffing here, or is this NRA policy in any formal way?
It's not riffing at all. Wayne LaPierre said it all the time. The guys with the guns make the rules. If you look at any of the NRA convention talks, and I've documented this well in my book, gun owners are there to fight tyranny. They've laid that out. The problem with that idea is that, you know, one man's tyranny is another guy's health care law. And so the idea that guns should be able to use in the political equation go against our most fundamental values, which is political equality. But this is something that the NRA has fully embraced. And it's been well documented. You can go to a website that we put together, meettheNRA.org, and you can see all the statements from the NRA leaders on tyranny and a bunch of other things. So, no, it's not riffing at all. That's the whole purpose of my book, to document that.
Wayne LaPierre, Executive VP of the NRA, talking about that and others. Bob Spitzer, do you agree? Has this become core ideology for the NRA, worldview?
Well, Josh Horowitz has described correctly this point of view, and it is very much in the rhetoric of the NRA and has a constituency in the country. But I would also point out that the vast majority of gun owners in America don't subscribe to that point of view. It's important to make these distinctions. There are about 80 million gun owners or so in the country, and most of them are perfectly responsible gun owners who engage in hunting sporting activities, some of whom may buy guns for personal self-protection, something that the Supreme Court did bring within the umbrella of the Second Amendment in a very important and controversial case in 2008.
Right.
But most gun owners are not embracing this sort of fierce anti-government rhetoric. And one reason the NRA does this is that it's a way to whip up the base and bring in new members who hold these feelings very strongly and are profoundly mistrustful and suspicious of the federal government and governing authority generally. And the NRA, fans these flames.
Is it possible that the NRA has drifted from the bulk of its own membership? Are you suggesting that most of its own members don't buy this sort of insurrectionist idea that we've got to have so many arms out among the public that they could at any time rise up and overthrow the government? Is it possible the NRA leadership is out on a limb here now that Newtown has come along?
Well, the NRA has attracted people who share this point of view, and that's part of the political objective behind it. Of the 4 million or so NRA members, certainly there must be a significant chunk that share at least some of these values or at least pay it some lip service because, after all, they hear this from the organization of which they're a part.
But the hunters that I grew up with didn't have assault weapons or high-capacity magazines. I can't imagine them having any interest in that.
Well, I think it's clear that the NRA leadership is separated from the vast majority of gun owners and probably from many members of their own organization. And the polling, when you ask members of the public what kind of policies they believe, they're completely opposite from what the NRA says. In fact, there's a recent op-ed from my colleague Daniel Webster, who said, give gun owners what they want, which is background checks on all gun sales. And so the polling and of gun owners is the same polling is basically of most Americans, which is we need to do something more on gun violence prevention. We need to have stronger laws. And of course, most people also believe that they should be able to have a gun in the home for self-defense. Those are different things. You can have a gun that's gone through a background check that's a modern type of pistol or something like that. But most people don't believe that we should have assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And the vast majority of people are for background checks on all gun sales.
But whether the NRA goes in that direction, another question. It's got its own membership and a very strong perspective here that millions have lined up hard behind. John in Manchester, Vermont. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Long-time listener. The notion that, the NRA wants to frame this argument you're either for the Second Amendment or you're against it is ludicrous. There are lots of nuances to the Second Amendment. I mean, not to mention the high-capacity magazines and the quantity of bullets that you can buy. Why not federalize the sale of bullets and tax them and charge a lot of money to buy bullets?
Yeah, but John, if you're Josh Horowitz describes this insurrectionist idea that citizens need to be adequately armed to rise up against the government. And you can imagine that federalizing the sale of ammunition would be right in the teeth of that.
That notion is ludicrous at best. the notion that you can buy enough weapons to protect yourself from the federal government, who has, you know, bombs of any quantity and, you know, drones of any quantity and tanks and jeeps.
Yeah, but I mean, 250 million guns in this country, that's a lot of guns too, is it not?
Well, buy them back. You know, that has happened in several places. I mean,
Australia.
Norway had this figured out in a week after that horrific murder of 76 people, I think. You know, in 1 week, their legislature came down on that.
Do you think the NRA will change, John? You've been watching. Lots of Americans have for a long time. Do you think they'll change in a significant way now or not?
They're paranoid. And, you know, the idea that, you know, that they're, you know, going to protect your right to carry a gun, and if you don't have that right, that somehow your life is diminished. What about my right? What about my rights to be protected from no guns or from limited access to guns?
John, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. What about that? What about that right? I appreciate your call. Let me get one from South Carolina, Columbia. Zach's calling. Hi, Zach. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to speak directly to the issue of calls for more weapons in schools. Here in South Carolina, the state newspaper headline covers a proposal speaking to that, and some of the talk radio here this morning, covers that issue. I was speaking to my law professor yesterday, and I'm also a veteran who was posted at Fort Hood, and we talked about the fact that in the weapons-saturated environment of Fort Hood, a massive shooting occurred there, similar to the one that occurred in Newtown.
Yeah, right in the middle of all those guns, yeah.
I mean, in a building less than a mile away from the rifle ranges. And I think that calling for more weapons is misguided and misses the point entirely, because there are both legal and administrative ways to address an individual like Lanza. Number one, you can find the gray area in a case like Heller, and you can use that and apply it to assault weapons and semi-automatic weapons and not tread on the Second Amendment, which the Supreme Court has incorporated through the 14th and found that it's an individual right.
But they did leave room in that decision for regulation as well. Zach, who was at Fort Hood, we take your perspective, and I'm glad for it. Let me get one more, if I may. Charleston, South Carolina, Ken. Ken, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
One of the points I wanted to make is simply that I find it almost disgusting that the left media's giddiness over this issue, that this tragedy, that they might finally score some points against the NRA.
Giddy. I mean, isn't it grief that people are feeling, Ken?
No, it's almost political joy that I see that they're going to make a point and finally bring down the NRA, the all-powerful NRA. I mean, that's disgusting.
Well, I don't know. I mean, but what about the death of all these children? And people look at the assault rifle and say, what on earth was that doing floating around in that kid's hands?
You know, evil exists in the world. Look at Syria. Look at all these other areas. Look at the threats and what, you know, it's very sad. But I think we miss the ball when we're not talking about the mental health issue. All the people that have done these things are crazy.
Well, I don't know about all of them. We talked for a full hour yesterday about the mental health issue. We're not ignoring it. But what about our gun policy, Ken? Do you see room to do anything? Or do we just have everything out there and then just hope for the best?
I just don't see that we'll ever make a difference. You will never collect what is already out there. Mm. And look at the assault weapons ban before. It made no difference. All it did is make a lot of gun brokers and dealers a lot of money.
Ken, I appreciate your call from Charleston. Everybody's trying to work through this. Giddy, I don't know. There's a lot of grief out there as well. Many Americans value their gun ownership rights, but also value life, children's lives. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the political power of the National Rifle Association, the NRA, after the Newtown massacre and whether we may see a change there. With Bob Spitzer of State University of New York in Cortland, Josh Horowitz is with us from the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Representative Jerry Connelly joins us in just a moment here. Lots of response online. Donnie says more gun laws won't stop the next Newtown. So, you know, forget it. On the other extreme here, P. Hughes says enough is enough. The people of this country need to decide whether they want gun-related violence to continue. P. Hughes writes, we need a national referendum on the repeal of the Second Amendment. We need to do a lot more than merely banning assault weapons. Well, there's the other poll. Mike writes about the NRA and the gun culture, says they capitalize on fear to drive donations. They use the money to push politicians. Mike writes, I own two handguns. He says the NRA can whip their supporters to a level of fervor unlike any other group. I'm all for owning guns, but who needs high-capacity magazines and assault rifles? He writes, I think there are real reforms that can happen without having to go all or nothing on guns. A lot of politicians have been very wary, though, of walking into those woods because the NRA can come down on you like a ton of bricks, put up a primary challenger, go after you in the general election, give you some real trouble. I want to get some political perspective on this right now. Congressman Jerry Connelly joins us from Washington, Democratic congressman from Virginia's 11th district, serves on the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. The NRA is headquartered in his district in Fairfax, Virginia. In 2010, he faced and defeated an NRA-backed opponent. Before serving in Congress, he was chairman of the Fairfax County Board of Supervisors. His county buried six people after the Virginia Tech massacre. Congressman Connelly, Jerry Connelly, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
The NRA has looked awfully powerful from people, you know, both looking at it from inside and outside Washington. Have they not been right? And does this change anything?
Well, you know, I don't think we want to make NRA the enemy. I think that they've sort of had the political field to themselves for all too long, however, in framing the issue. A little earlier, you were, in fact, quoting somebody who said, you know, gun laws aren't the answer. Well, see, that's sort of the argument they've made, and successfully, and it's a false one. The fact that new gun laws won't solve every incident of gun violence doesn't mean, therefore, there should be no new gun laws and no examination of the current framework of the gun culture in America. We can and we should adopt reasonable standards for the ownership of guns and the appropriate place in which they may be brought. However, no one wants to take away anyone's so-called Second Amendment right. I call it so-called because I happen to think Antonin Scalia came up with a very novel interpretation for the first time in the history of the Republic about what that Second Amendment meant.
But that is our Supreme Court, and that was its decision.
That is now the law of the land until a different Supreme Court might reconsider. So that is the law of the land, but that even Antonin Scalia said in the Heller opinion that established this new novel interpretation, that that did not preclude reasonable gun control measures.
So, but you know, and this isn't to make an enemy of the NRA, but if you just look at their policy push, it's been very hard, and it continues not just the federal level, but down to the state level, you know, pushing for more and more access, more and more right to carry, going after politicians who resist them on even small things here. I've been reading about the state legislature in, what was it, Tennessee, where the NRA wanted legislation that would require you to allow people to lock guns in their, have locked guns in their cars in your parking lot, even if you didn't want guns in your parking lot.
Yeah.
I mean, and they went after her. She was head of the Republican caucus there, knocked her out in the primaries. They have been very, very tough. What does that mean for politicians' readiness to take on some of these issues?
Well, we have to change the terms of the debate. We have to not be intimidated. And there's a new ally on the scene, which is, you know, who is Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, who's willing to put a lot of money behind his political beliefs on the other side of the issue. Now, I reject the either-or argument. I reject the idea that we need to repeal the Second Amendment, and I reject the NRA argument that any consideration of any restrictions on weapons designed solely to kill lots of people is somehow an either-or proposition. That means they're going to try to take away our guns. That's not true. It is a false assertion. And they are presenting the American people, and have been, with false choices. They've backed it up with a lot of money and with a political campaign of intimidation for anybody who steps out of line. You're at political risk, for daring to suggest we might want to regulate certain kinds of weapons. The absurdity of their position, and by the way, Antonin Scalia's position and his interpretation of what the founders meant by the Second Amendment, let me just present it starkly. So is there an unlimited right, based on his interpretation and their interpretation of the Second Amendment, to have RBGs, Stinger missiles, and rocket launchers in your backyard?
I don't know. It seems pretty wide open. But that political intimidation, does it change now or not? I mean, we see these people in the Senate, but not in the House on the Republican side?
Yes, not a single Republican in this body of representatives has yet to take to the floor or issue a statement saying, I'm reconsidering, or, you know, we're going to have to, Newtown changes things, we're going to have to consider some measures. Not one. Speaker Boehner put his foot in the water a little bit vaguely, but nobody has taken to the floor, although some very strong pro-gun advocates on the Democratic side have done just that, both in the House and the Senate. But I do believe, tragically, the Newtown tragedy create some new political space for this debate.
Where does that show up? If we haven't heard anything there yet, and is the NRA going to change?
I'll give you evidence point number one. The Republican governor of Michigan, who just signed legislation, creating right to work in Michigan, vetoed a bill passed by the Republican legislature 2 days before the tragedy in Newtown that would have allowed concealed weapons into schools.
He's a former businessman with a lot of private wealth. If he doesn't get reelected, maybe it doesn't matter to him. But what about in your House of Representatives?
But wait a minute. There's a reason he vetoed that bill subsequent to Newtown. And that's a very key piece of evidence. You know, he's not a liberal Democrat. He is a conservative Republican. And he felt the climate change. He felt that was a step way too far.
But my point is, he's independently wealthy, I believe. If the NRA comes after him and he loses the governor's seat, so what? You've got a lot of fellow members in the House who are not in that position. They want to hang on to those seats, and they may fear the NRA coming after them.
Right, Tom, let me jump in here on this. The election in 2012 was a disaster for the National Rifle Association. The Senate candidates that they spent more than $100,000 in, 6 out of 7 lost. 17 of their A-rated candidates of the 30 that lost. There was 30 candidates that lost. 17 were NRA A-rated, and they lost. They went all in on President Obama, and they lost. Pro-gun Democrats who have A ratings, a number of them, for instance, Joe Baca, Bloomberg spent a lot of money from a super PAC and defeated these folks. There's now a change in the political equation out there.
Even before Newtown, you're saying, Josh?
Absolutely. We were optimistic. I was optimistic about the election front, and the chance for policy before Newtown, because there's a change. There is a consequence now of voting for the NRA, and that
is losing
your seat.
I'll take that to Jerry Connelly, but Bob Spitzer, do you buy that? There's a change in the climate here that's going to lead people to say, well, no, maybe NRA, you can just, I'm going to go my own way and never mind.
I think there has been a change in the climate, at least especially since Friday. But the larger point that Josh Horowitz is getting to is a correct one. There's been a close empirical analysis of recent elections, the midterm and of national elections every 2 years in the past decade, as well as the 2000 presidential election and the 1994 midterm elections when the Republicans won control of Congress, which demonstrates pretty clearly that the NRA's influence, which it claims to be great over the outcome of these elections, was essentially nil. That is, an empirical analysis demonstrates that most voters don't vote on single issues, especially an issue as narrow as the gun issue. There are many, many interest groups that are at play on many, many different subjects, and the NRA's actual ability to move elections, to defeat somebody that they oppose or to elect somebody that they support, in and of itself, pretty much doesn't exist.
Congressman Connelly, do your fellow House members buy that? Or do they have the courage of that perspective?
Well, I think it's I think people are reassessing that issue, but the empirical evidence just cited is very valid. But remember, perception is just as important as empirical evidence. And I would say the perception is much slower to catch up to empirical reality. I will, however, add, I ran full bore in 2010 as somebody who favored reasonable gun control measures against an NRA-sponsored candidate who actually staked out a position saying that had the victims of Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. the single worst mass killing by gun in the history of any college university campus in the United States, had they been packing heat, they might have survived. And I went right after him on that, and I beat him in the worst year in, you know, 50 years for Democrats in 2010, mm-hmm. In a close election, but within the shadow of the headquarters of NRA itself. So it isn't just 2012, but I do think you've got to have a robust debate. People, one of the reasons the American people have sort of been lulled into feeling there's nothing we can do is because political leaders have frankly abandoned the field. And I think the results of the 2012 election and sadly the tragedy of Newtown have created some new political space in which to reopen this debate, to re-examine some suppositions we thought were settled. And I think that's very healthy for America.
Let's go to Brad calling from Fort Campbell, Kentucky. Brad, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a 14-year combat veteran in the U.S. Army and also the daughter of three, the father of three young daughters, mm-hmm. 5, 7, and 9.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Friday shocked me, upset me as much as it could have any other parent in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a lot of emotional effort trying to hold it together and do my job without showing those emotions on Friday.
Yeah.
Listen, I have to say I think this argument is, especially about the Second Amendment, is missing a key point regarding the Second Amendment and regarding the nature of this country and how it was founded. The fundamental basis of power and control is force. And the Second Amendment, the way I read history and the way I've looked at it, the Second Amendment was not there to protect our rights to own guns for whatever reason. The point was to make sure that the citizenry was armed to protect themselves from whatever threats they might need to protect themselves from, including, up to and including, a tyrannical government.
But what,
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and
okay.
I don't think that our government is on that step, but we weren't intended to have a massive, permanent military establishment. We were meant to be a country of armed citizens who maintained their own freedom.
So where does that take you, Brad? Does that take you to everybody arming up, or do you want to see more controls? Which direction?
Oh, Lord, that's a tough one, isn't it? I can't, unfortunately, see any justification for removing that most foundation, that most basic foundation of preserving liberty.
But what about using that force to protect our democracy and make the fundament of our interaction with one another our votes, not bullets?
It should be that way. That's what our founders intended and hoped for. But in the event that the political system fails and the people are still trod upon, so to speak,
how about we focus on the democracy that our founders fought for? I appreciate your call, Brad. Josh Horowitz, what do you say to that?
Well, I think that's the insurrectionist idea right there. And there's definitely, and if you follow that, that's why people want to have assault weapons and high capacity magazines, because ultimately they want to be prepared to have war, and they might be preparing to make to have war with the government. And that is, you know, a real anathema to our democracy. It's sort of what the Civil War was about. Abraham Lincoln famously said, among free men, there can be no appeal from the ballot to the bullet, which means that, you know, once you go to the bullet, there is no democracy. And so, you know, that's a really core problem. And if you take that idea to its extreme, they're really, you know, that's the reason that the caller was so difficult to say whether he wanted more, you know, even more regulation. And it's a fundamental way to avoid regulation if you say we need to be ready to take on the tyrannical government. And it's a problem. And I don't think most people have that idea, but that's one of the sort of ways the NRA has attracted a lot of their new members.
If I may, our time is so short. Bob Spitzer, what are you going to be listening for on Friday at the NRA's press conference? And I'll bring it to you, Congressman, as well. But Bob, first to you.
Yeah, well, I'll be interested to see the specifics of their proposal and if they say anything meaningful about any of the possible policy proposals that are being floated today. I'd be shocked if they embraced any of them, but I'm prepared to be shocked.
Jerry Connelly, what do you see coming here?
I don't anticipate any great dramatic change on the part of the NRA because they've made their living, they've expanded their membership list, they raised their money by fear, by propounding the idea that there's some conspiracy to take away all of your guns, and therefore we can't afford to regulate or restrict any. That is a false choice, but it's one in which they've made their living and established their credibility. So I think they're probably going to express sorrow for the tragedy, but redouble their commitment to resisting any and all attempts to provide reasonable safety for the public with respect to dangerous weapons.
If they don't change, if the NRA doesn't change, will the House of Representatives, will the Congress?
Not until we have another election. In my opinion, the Republican majority absolutely has no intention of moving on anything. The only chance I'd give in the 113th Congress is the possible reinstatement of the assault weapons ban.
That would be something. It's going to be something just to watch how this plays out. So much grief and people's concern just ratcheted up so high, and understandably, after Newtown, Connecticut. Congressman Jerry Connelly from Virginia's 11th District, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Josh Horowitz with the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. Thank you very much, Josh.
Thank you.
And Professor Robert Bob Spitzer, author of The Politics of Gun Control and the Right to Bear Arms. Thank you very much for joining us, Bob.
You bet.
Tomorrow, we will talk about Social Security and the proposal to go to the chained Consumer Price Index, changing the measure of inflation. That will change what it pays. We'll look at the implications. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.